You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. David Baer here, and I want to start things off today by reading the opening of one of my very favorite books. It's a book called Breakthrough Advertising. It was written back in the 1960s by a guy named Eugene Schwartz. And here's how it opens. The opening chapter is called Mass Desire. Let's get right down to the heart of the matter. The power, the force, the overwhelming urge to own that makes advertising work comes from the market itself and not from the copy. Copy cannot create desire for a product. It can only take the hopes, dreams, fears, and desires that already exist in the hearts of millions of people and focus those already existing desires onto a particular product. This is the copywriter's task, not to create the mass desire, but to channel and direct it. Now, why did I read this particular passage of all things on an episode where we're going to be chatting with an expert in branding and positioning of startups? Well, I'm going to ask my guest, Orly Ziwi, to probably interpret what I just shared with you so that you understand how it is totally relevant to the work that she does with her clients as well. Hey, Orly, welcome to the show.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I didn't tell you I was going to read that. And I have no doubt that you understand exactly why I did read that and what the relevance is to what we're going to be talking about and the work that you do. So by way of introduction to the work you do, why don't you help our listeners understand why that was so incredibly relevant?
Oh my gosh, where to begin? It's a great passage, by the way, and please send it to me because I'm going to use it. So there's this idea that, you know, and I've written about this and I've done webinars on this, this idea that if you build it, they will buy. And the problem with that is you haven't actually figured out if it's something people want. And so this idea of, you know, understanding the market and not just understanding it, but where it is in this point in time and where you, what you do, what you're building, how does that fit? How does that connect with what's already out there that people, and, you know, I talk a lot about with startups, especially, you know, is there a workaround that you're not aware of that people are doing now that works probably just as well as maybe what you're proposing? How are you going to get past that? Right. So you have to understand where people are. You have to understand what they're doing now. And then there's the need versus the pain, right? There's the need, want versus pain. And that's, so if it's just a need, that's a nice to have. And a nice to have, you know, you can put it in a better package. You can make it easier to use, but you're not going to convince me to spend a lot of money for something that I don't see as a must-have. So this idea of the market, of understanding where the market is, it means that I've done my research. I understand what people, whether it's a need, want, or a pain. And I also understand how what I'm offering fits and either makes it easier to do, makes it more fun to do, you know, helps you sleep better at night. You know, these are the things that you want to think about. And as you so well put it, so it's, you know, the article really, I think, says it so well, so succinctly. It's copy doesn't create the need, doesn't create the desire. What it does is it helps me see how whatever this is fits where you are and helps you fulfill that need, desire, and solves that pain point.
I love the way that you were able to put that together without me telling you in advance. Let's talk before we dive into this in more detail, a little bit about startups, the landscape of startups. Obviously, we're recording this in 2023. We have been in for decades now, an environment where technology has driven a lot of what startups are. But startups are nothing new. It's really just new categories or new definitions of categories in business. So can you sort of give us an understanding of what or how you define a startup?
So I actually, on the back of my book, I actually describe it. And a startup is, you know, if building an app, right, it's this idea on technology, it's about, you know, building the plane while you're flying it. A startup is building the plane while you're flying it, while you're interviewing for co-pilots and serving coffee.
Wow, that's a scary notion, especially. I'm not sure I would want to be on that plane.
Now, and also figuring out where my destination is. So the thing about startups, you know, and I've worked with startups now for a couple of decades. And in fact, you know, I was just having a conversation with a startup yesterday. And, you know, what founders tend to do, and I see this over and over again, is that they go right into, you know, let's get people to sign up. Let's get people to want this, right? And so they jump right into sales language. And what they forget is that we want to have relationships with brands that matter to us. Whether you just started 5 minutes ago or you've been around for, you know, 100 years, we still want that relationship. And so there's a missing piece for founders because they're so focused on keeping the lights on. Mm. And they're so focused on, you know, getting users if it's an app or getting people to sign up. You know, I mean, the person I was speaking to yesterday, you know, they're trying to get more people to sign up to their email list. And they're really focused on the end result, which is filling that pipeline. And so what happens, right? So what happens is they're so focused on their outcome that they forget that it's not about them. It's about their potential clients, users, clients.
So let's try to differentiate the startup mindset of a founder from a typical business that already fits in a category that the market understands. So, you know, a donut shop or a financial advisor or a dry cleaner, right? We know what those are. We know how they fulfill our needs because they're just the next version of something we already understand. And so I'm imagining that when they open their doors, they can do that sort of thing that you've just described more effectively, more successfully, because people know, right, this is what I'm buying. And the company knows this is what I'm fulfilling. And so there's a shortcut there that perhaps doesn't exist with many startups because they have to actually define who they are, what they do, who they serve, what problem they solve, et cetera. Am I getting that right, or am I missing something here?
I'm going to say yes and. Yes, and if you're a donut shop, there's one on every corner. So your issue is differentiation. And just because you open the door, you know, first of all, what you're not taking into consideration is, okay, I understand what a donut shop is, but I already have my favorite place. You need to now change my mindset about something that I've been very happy with. And I think that the difference between an existing company and a startup is a startup, it's in a way, it's a blank slate, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're reinventing the wheel. A lot of times, I mean, okay, we can take Apple. You know, Apple is always a great example. When they came up with the iPhone, they weren't the first one to come up with a smartphone. What they did that was really different and why they were so successful is they built an entire ecosystem around a smartphone. I mean, who even thought about apps, you know, before 2007, right? I mean, it was just, you know, the whole idea, the whole concept, they changed the way we interacted and they created a whole new type of community that didn't exist before. The thing with an existing client, and I see this especially, you know, you're talking about the B2C world where you've got a brick and mortar, for instance, you know, if we're talking about a brick and mortar, you know, that's a hard thing to do right now in 2023 because there's so many options. Plus, you're also fighting with, or not fighting, but you're also competing with the digital space, right? So, but I think with startups, you know, what I find so interesting is that they want to jump right into, like, as I said, right into the selling before they figured out who they are. So, you know, I talk about, so marketing is the engine to sales and branding is the piece that kind of establishes the engine, right? It's like, mm-hmm. it's the director, I guess. If you want to say marketing is the engine and then branding is the conductor. You've got to figure out who you are, where you're going, who needs it, and do they value this? And I will tell you, one of the things that I see over and over again is that a startup, a founder will, or co-founders, you know, they'll build this startup and they haven't really figured out who needs it. And so they spend a lot of time spinning their wheels, trying to convince the wrong people to buy something they're not going to buy.
Yeah. As you've been talking about this, I've been thinking about how I, as a consumer, interact with some of these startup brands,
yeah.
and where I'm seeing lack of clarity about, you know, whether they're a fit for me or a fit for anybody. And I think that the place where this is most obvious, this is just one route to finding adopters in a startup, and specifically we're talking about technology here, is through platforms like AppSumo. Right, I'm an AppSumo addict. My last AppSumo purchase was 67 days ago. I'm trying my best not to buy anything else, but I bought a lot of stuff on that platform. Now, for folks who don't know AppSumo, it's a marketplace where a lot of technology tools basically launch looking for users. And my experience with a lot of the things that I've bought is that they will not have clarity on who they're serving. They have clarity on what they do. We have this thing, we built it, it does, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then what happens is they adopt a whole bunch of users and then start asking us, tell us what you'd like to see from us. And then based on sort of, I don't know, popular demand from people who are most active or most vocal, they'll then start building things out. Sometimes they build things out that become incredibly bloated and have lack of focus because they're just trying to be everything to everyone. Sometimes they have a realization, gosh, you know, we finally, after having users in here, have found the right fit. And so here is the direction we're going. And by the way, sorry to tell the majority of you, but we're actually not a fit for you because we've decided to take a sharp left turn and do this thing instead. I imagine you see all kinds of variations on that theme.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's definitely another way to go, right? Just put it out there and see who responds. And you know, this is especially true in the tech world, I would say, more so than any. I mean, I think as a law firm, you can't really do that. But as a tech, a startup, absolutely. And in fact, you know, one of the reasons why, and one of the ways that I've seen tech companies really do well is they have a sense of who that kind of early adopter or the brand evangelist, right? The people who are just, they're so excited because they're tech, you know, they're tech geeks. They're the people who are just, they can't wait. They're the people who waited, you know, stayed out all night long to get that first Apple, the first smartphone, the first iPhone, right? So they're out there already. And if you're in the tech community, you know who they are. You know they're going to want to look at this because that's kind of their jam, right? And to your point about now we've decided to take this hard left, you can only do that once you know that you've got enough people who are willing to turn left with you.
Mm-hmm. So all right. I asked you before we hit record, and you sort of started down this path, but I want to go a little bit deeper. You've worked with a lot of startups, not just in the tech space over, you know, a couple of decades, as you said. And one of the things that you are known for is for creating clarity. What you have this great phrase, which is that you make fuzzy clear. And I think there's a lot of fuzziness in most businesses. But as you've, you know, explained, particularly in startups who necessarily don't have that experience working with the market around the thing that they happen to be selling. And so they build things, create things, probably based off of a problem that they think needs to be solved or that they've experienced themselves. And so they're building it for them or for themselves. I'm curious for what other reasons, you know, startups tend to get going based on your experience. But you had some observations that you shared a little bit earlier about what many startups do that you're brought in to help solve. And I wonder if you can sort of walk us through that story, paint the picture of where the challenges lie that require somebody like you to be able to come in and say, guys, we got to actually figure some things out here if you want to hit the goals that you have for your business.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, what I find is, you know, the first step is they're just sending stuff, they're just putting stuff out there and, you know, throwing things up against the wall and seeing what sticks. What I especially find interesting is when I go on their homepage, and this is like, you know, the homepage is, that's your front, the front door to your brand, right? And I often use this analogy that, you know, unless you're a hoarder, you typically don't put everything you own outside your front door, right? You maybe have a couple plants, you have a couple chairs, you know, that kind of thing, but you don't put like all your kitchen utensils and your bedroom furniture and your clothing, right? You don't do all that. But yet, when I go on someone's homepage, it's usually incredibly busy, or it's so focused on selling me, right? Like, because again, you know, it's about my problem is I need users. I need to fill the pipeline. I need to keep the lights on. It's really very internally focused, what matters to me. But when I land on a homepage, I only need to know two things. Why am I here and why should I care? And unless I can see that in 6 seconds, I'm gone. I don't come back. So it's not just about getting people to engage with your product or your idea or, you know, your service. It's that even if it's not for me, if you're clear about what it is you do and who you do this for, I may refer people to you. I'm going to copy the URL and I'm going to send it to people I know who need you. If you haven't clarified all of that, if I don't really get what this is, and all you're really doing is saying, hey, you know, contact us, call us, you know, sign up for our email, whatever. It's like, I don't even know what this is, right? And you're already, like, you're 5 steps ahead of me. And I think what founders often forget is that the problem they need to solve is not their problem. The problem they need to solve is why would somebody want to even engage with this? Forget about buying or having some kind of exchange. It's really, why am I here? Show me something that tells me you understand the problem I'm struggling with and you have an answer for me. So back to what you were saying about, you know, messaging, that kind of, you know, that generic messaging is, that's usually what I see. I see generic messaging because I haven't really figured out who needs this. And so I feel like, well, I'll just, you know, cast a wide net. And somebody will want this. And that's not how that works. It works actually just the opposite. Figure out who that person is and speak to that person and more of them will show up.
I see this a lot in, a lot of the technology that we're seeing right now around artificial intelligence and cool things you can do with it, right? And so people are incredibly enthusiastic about the cool stuff they can build or the cool outcomes they can create with it, and then are trying to figure out how to monetize that. But as you stated, and as I read in the opening to Breakthrough Advertising, there's no demonstrated desire or mass desire as the book refers to it, that's demonstrated in the marketplace that says, I have this problem I'd like solved that you can make a connection to. I've seen this with online courses from, you know, there's a lot of people in the coaching space who feel like, all right, well, if I'm not going to be able to coach somebody, at least I can create a product to sell to them. And I've seen a lot of products that have never made any sales because they're creating a product that, again, there's no desire for it because they haven't made the connection between what the marketplace is dealing with or looking for and how their product solves that or addresses it.
Well, there's another part to that. And that's a great point, by the way, David. The other piece of that is they haven't taken the time to actually ask people, is this something that you want? You know, and I'm speaking actually from my own experience, because I'm building a course myself. And at first I was just going to launch it, right? I mean, talk about, you know, right, making all the same mistakes that everyone else makes. And then somebody said, you know, have you actually asked people? So I created a form, an online form. I asked open-ended questions, which if you want to get feedback, don't ask yes or no questions. You always want to ask open-ended questions and give people options. So like a multiple choice, and there's all other is always one of them. And what I heard was really interesting. You know, I again, for me, it's about, you know, clarity, right? And I thought, oh, I'm just going to talk about fuzzy to clear. And what I heard was, and this is one of the reasons why I really like doing these forums, because you get some interesting quotes. And one of them was, I don't want to be another voice in a sea of sameness.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, yeah, that's it. And it's really about, so I've switched from fuzzy to clear and switched it into becoming visible, because the thing that isn't happening, the reason you're not connecting with people is because they can't see you. And they can't see you because you haven't cut through all that noise with messaging that means something to them.
I want to point something out based on the story you just shared. I'm imagining that you didn't change the content of the course. You merely changed the positioning of selling of the course. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to guess that what I just said applies pretty much to a lot of the work that you do with your clients as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Explain.
Yeah. So which is so it's in a way, it's kind of embarrassing, right? Here I am telling other people how to do this and I can't even do it for myself.
And by the way, we're all cobbler's children and we all deal with the same issue. And, you know, as a marketer, I got to say I'm the worst at marketing myself.
Of course, because it's, you know, we're brilliant at doing it for other people. What I found so interesting is I had to step back. And, you know, one of the things that's the hardest, and I think this is true, every founder will recognize this, you have to put your ego aside and say, even though I'm really good at this, and this is really good stuff, and I'm an expert, et cetera, you know, if I don't connect with somebody in a way that means something to them, they're not going to want this, right? So it's really about, you have to meet people where they are. That's the other piece. Meet them where they are. And then not start right at the top, right? So this is why I also developed a different way to think about this. So instead of going right to the course, which I actually had a couple of people who were interested, and then it was like, it was too big a jump, you know? And so I started with a webinar, and you know, the next thing is I'm going to do a module. So test drive it in essence. And then depending on how the module will be a way for me also to get feedback. Right. And to get people to, and again, you have to be willing to hear the feedback. That's the other thing. You have to be willing to hear it and then willing to do the necessary work to pivot if necessary. But I do think that founders, by their very nature, because they're passionate people, which is one of the reasons why I enjoy working with founders so much, they're passionate about what they're doing. They see things that other people don't see. You know, I always reminded, you know, Henry Ford, who said, you know, if we'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse, right? It's not, so you can appreciate, you know, kind of their enthusiasm. The problem is we're not ready yet. Like, we're not where you are because you're like 10 steps ahead of me. And I think what was so brilliant, again, with the iPhone is, again, they weren't reinventing the wheel. They were just presenting it to us in a way that I could walk into it step by step and realize that, you know, apps were part of that. And we could, you know, the more you engage me, the more I want to do it. And that's part of the kind of the cool factor of Apple is they know how to do that.
You know, as you were talking about the course, I was, and then you sort of went back into the startups and how founders operate and think. I was thinking about this concept, at least for information products, and I think it can apply to any type of product, of selling it before you build it. And I think, you know, as I've thought back to sort of the great stories about, you know, major businesses these days, like Boeing, for example. Boeing started without having products, right? They developed the solution after they sold the idea of a fleet of airplanes to deliver postal mail or something like that. I probably got the story wrong now that I've said that out loud, but I imagine that this is a much smarter approach, because if you attempt to position and sell something and then you find that it doesn't work in the market, well, work on repositioning it and reselling it before you build whatever the heck you're building. And so these incredibly intelligent, forward-thinking founders probably could do well by figuring out, how do I sell this brilliant idea that I have, find the right fit for it, and then go and build it.
That's right. And that's where MVPs come in, right? Minimum viable product. I mean, I don't know, I'm sure you know IDEO, right? That company, industrial design company. Founder, I forget his name at the moment, but he's written several books. And one of the stories they share is, you know, they go to a meeting and they've got like one of those erasers, you know, that on blackboards and a pen, and they tape it together and they go, what if I did something like this and it did this, this, and this? Would that make sense to you? Right. It's not about being sophisticated. It's about being able to get someone to see how to use something and does it fit? And then the more rough it is, the rougher it is, the easier it is for me to jump in and work with you. If it's already completely built, what am I going to say? You know, well, there's nothing for me to respond to. And so I think this idea, and I don't know that, you know, this is just one example, but one of the things to consider is, you know, also human behavior. Like, do I understand how someone is going to interact with this in a way that's going to help them feel empowered, excited, whatever, you know, pick an adjective there, you know, transformed in some way.
I wonder, we've been talking in sort of, not abstract, but sort of generalities here. If we can take a moment to walk through whether it's fictitious or real, an actual business and how you might come into a situation, what you see on the ground, why they've said we need help at this point, right? What they've recognized about themselves, and then where things go from there.
So I have a great example, which is a summer day camp. And I worked with them many years ago, and they've been around since the 1950s. They used to be the gold standard of summer day camps. This is in Northeast Pennsylvania. But they hadn't really kept up with what was happening. And so all of a sudden, in the 1980s, they did some revamp kind of thing. I came in and met with them, I think it was probably early 2000s, maybe 2005, something like that. We did an online survey, and because they have, you know, hundreds of families people who they've interacted with, they got 100 responses, which is kind of an amazing thing to get 100 responses. And, you know, one of the questions, which is really pivotal to this, is they ask people, the one reason why they send their kids there. Now, let me just back up here and say that all of their messaging was around the lake. They have like a 200 acre lake or something. I mean, it's a beautiful place, by the way. And everything they talked about was around the lake, including their logo represented a lake. And lake isn't actually in the name. So I get why all that happened. Mm-hmm. But when they asked families, when they asked them what was the one thing that was the reason they send their kids there, out of 100 people, I think maybe one or two said the lake. They were so out of touch with really the reason why their parents send their kids there. And it turned out that the reason that parents sent their kids there was not about the lake, but it was because of the experience their kids had and how they grew up. You know, they were in a safe environment where they're able to take risks. And they have an amazing swim program, by the way, just as a little aside, one of the best in the area. And they're kind of known for that. And when I came in, we did a whole like deep dive. I spent time, you know, with their folks. And one of the things that came out of that is this is the place where small kids do big things.
Oh, I love that.
And it's almost like I literally remember like people just going, oh my God, yeah, that's what it is. And what was so interesting, I had looked at, you know, dozens of photographs. I'd read letters. I mean, these letters were amazing. You taught me how to be a better person, I'm a better parent, better human, better employee. I mean, and the goal, you know, they kind of went back to why they do this, which is they want to create better human beings because better human beings create a better world. And so they moved away. So I actually helped redesign their logo. And the logo now is a picture. It's an image icon, basically an avatar, I guess, of a child from the back. So you can't tell if it's a boy or a girl. And they literally look like they're jumping into a lake or off a boat or right. And it's this idea of I am here to take risks because there are people here who are keeping me safe and I'm going to be able to do bigger things. And so now, you know, because usually it's the whole family, they sent all their kids there. And so I also helped them identify where the sweet spot was, like stop trying to talk to 15-year-olds to come here. They're not going to do that. You know, you decide where you want to go to summer camp when you're 6, 7, 8. And that's the, you know, between maybe 6 and 13, maybe even 11. And after that, you go where your friends are. So they're not going to, you know, so it was also thinking about, you know, kind of the air, the range of age and when they want to talk to them.
There's something about, well, you talked about doing a survey there, and I think the surveys are obviously incredibly yes, useful if you're asking the right questions of the right people.
Well, that's good.
And there was one, yeah, look, here's one little subtle tea that I want to point out, and then to get you know, the benefit of stuff like this and the deeper thinking, folks will need to reach out to you to understand how to do this in a more sophisticated manner. But the way that you described it, you were saying we asked parents of kids who had already been there.
Yes.
But there is a difference in positioning to people to come back, right? Because they've already experienced something, and people who might have a different perspective, never having sent a kid away to day camp. And so there's a variation on that question that I imagine you also asked, which was, you know, what made you do this in the first place? Or what were you dealing with? What were you thinking prior to sending your kid to camp for the first time, which probably helped extract similar useful language and perspective. And there's all kinds of subtlety that I imagine that you include in the type of survey work that you do to really get at the heart of the matter for the right people.
You know, what you said is so true. It's like, I always say, if you ask the wrong question, the answer doesn't matter. And in this case, and I will say there was one other question, which was, and remember, they'd used the same logo for like 40 years. And one of the questions was, you know, what do you think about our logo? And literally people said, what logo? They literally didn't see it. Yeah. And so the reason I mention that is because you have to understand that if you're in the wrong space, anything that's built on the wrong idea doesn't get seen either.
I had somebody ask me the other day, I don't know why this came up, but what is the Arby's logo?
The hat. Yeah, the hat, yes, thing.
Well, it turns out it's not a hat.
Oh, really?
It's an oven mitt.
No. Is it really?
Yes. And again, right, that just speaks to the fact that people don't necessarily register with, you know, the meaning behind logos, right? So there you go.
Wow, that really blows me away. I had no idea what that was.
So Orly, why don't we wrap things up by sharing a little bit about the folks you serve, the type of services you provide, and where folks can learn a little bit more about you.
Well, probably the best place that you can go is to my website, ziwibrands.com. You can also, of course, find me on LinkedIn, just Orly Ziwi, and on Twitter as well, Orly Ziwi. In terms of, you know, the folks that I work with are, as I said, you know, I do work with founders. I also work with solopreneurs, early stage companies, but I've also worked with a lot of companies who get stuck and are, you know, find themselves kind of in a space where people really don't know who they are, what they do. And it becomes really hard to cross sell because their salespeople aren't able to even explain what they do. And so it's also a kind of a space in time where you suddenly realize that you didn't do that work before. And now maybe you need to rethink it. So, there's a whole process, a brand strategy, messaging strategy, web strategy. There's a whole LinkedIn rebrand. So there's all kind of, there's other pieces. And of course, you know, there's a lot of components to this, but the idea is how do we get clear about who we are, who we serve, and why they need us?
Beautiful. Well, we will have all the links you mentioned, of course, zwebrands.com, as well as your social links. Orly Zewe, thank you so very much for hanging out with me. This has been really a pleasure to chat with you.
Well, thank you so much, David. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Folks, if you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the conversation you just heard, and I promise you there were a lot of gems in there you probably want to share, please, by all means, send this episode their way. Until next time, my name's David Baer, and you've been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.